today on Family Talk.
Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson. In a few moments, you're going to hear part two of a broadcast we began yesterday that featured Dr. Tim Clinton and clinical therapist Dr. Barry Lord. They discussed the destructiveness of spousal abuse. It is difficult to overstate its impact. Now, let's listen to a quick clip from the program last time to get us started, and we can get a better understanding of the emotional breakdown that occurs where there is violence in the home.
In a family, there is an expectation of trust and safety. And when one or other members of that family violate that in a severe form, such as abuse, sexual assault, there's all kinds of descriptions of abuse. But when somebody violates it to that degree, they have violated a trust fiduciary relationship, and that is a major crime against a person.
As Dr. Lord said, when trust is broken in a marriage, especially if it involves physical violence, the person subjected to it may never fully recover from that experience. If you're such a victim of abuse in your home, I urge you to call a National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. That number again is 1-800-799-7233. Now, today my colleagues, Dr. Tim Clinton and Dr. Barry Lord, are going to delve into this subject, especially dealing with what women go through when they're trapped in this kind of abusive marriage. They also address how reconciliation is possible for broken relationships, but that requires a lot of time and understanding. Before we dive into this edition of Family Talk, let me reintroduce our guest to you. Dr. Barry Lord is a seasoned counselor and therapist with over 30 years of experience. He's a retired dean of the Behavioral Sciences Department at Southern California Seminary, where he is also a professor emeritus. To start, we're going to roll back that recording to yesterday's broadcast to reset where we're going today. Here again is Dr. Tim Clinton on this edition of Family Talk.
Barry, I'm still in my mind staying with this being on the receiving end of someone's anger. In that, I'm thinking about her being maybe sexually coerced, him taunting or messing with her over the kids to a point of where it makes her like lose her mind. What is it doing to her soul, to her heart, Barry? I think it would be easy to talk about feelings of helplessness and anxiety and a sense
betrayal.
Of worthlessness.
Betrayal.
There, a good word.
Betrayal is a good word. And you know something? Nobody deserves to be betrayed, especially in a love relationship. That totally distorts everything that God intends for marriage.
I think it just mars the soul. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
No, no.
And who's going to be the advocate in all this? You know that? Who helps her?
I agree with you totally. I don't make excuses and I don't hug thugs. I just want to make that clear to your listening audience. I really do care about the victims. And I care deeply about them. I have sat in the counseling sessions with abuse cases where I've worked with victims and heard their sad stories and the horror and the post-traumatic stress, the reliving of those horrible things. We have to let them tell their stories. We have to hear the narratives without fixing, without educating them, but simply stay engaged. If you're a counselor listening to this, I cannot fix her pain. I can't say the pain is okay or it's going to go away. But what I can do is I can be present with her. I can get her to tell her story. I can encourage that. She can feel believed. Then she can go about the business of healing and not go about the business of trying to convince somebody how betrayed she was. She needs to be heard.
Barry, the pattern of abuse you had mentioned earlier, I was just scribbling down in my notes here. A trigger incident happens. Things escalate between the two of them. The abuse occurs, this violent act or whatever. There's obviously remorse. I'm sorry, baby. I promise you I'll never do it again. And then maybe things are okay for a little while, and then a trigger happens, and it goes on and again. People often, in the midst of this, wonder what's wrong with her. Why doesn't she pack up and get her tail out of there?
Oh, there's a ton of reasons. Being in San Diego, I work a lot with military, law enforcement. I have policemen that are in my batterers groups. I've had a judge in my batterers group. I've had a number of military in my batterers group, officers, enlisted men. And they're all facing the same thing. How do I control my rage, my anger, when it's building up inside of me and I'm so stressed I can't stand straight? And she comes along and the kids are screaming. She's not, I want her to make a home for me where I can come home and recoup and be safe myself, and that's not occurring. And I don't know any other way of getting her to do what I want her to do except get forceful and maybe make a threat. Yes, it occurs. And occurs to good people. And we don't want it to happen to good people, but the law is very strict. These people will go to jail. And here's the sad thing. In the military or law enforcement, they lose their weapons. And that's how they make their livelihood. Question, if my husband is a police officer, are the other police officers going to believe me? Number two, will we lose our livelihood if I report? Military, will my husband, who brings home the bacon, and I live in Navy housing, if he goes to jail, is that going to end his career? Is he up for promotion that I've just squandered that promotion for my husband? And they do love their mates oftentimes. But if it's a reoccurring theme and they need to get out of the relationship, there are programs all over the United States. If you're battered, you might have to go to 32 different agencies before you get all the help you need. You could be talking law enforcement, district attorney. There's two agencies right there. Social workers, protection. How do I take care of my kids?
I want to talk about all those in just a moment, because you're right. This is serious. There's so much to do here.
To unpack.
It's critical. But let me go back to why she stays. I just scribbled down listening to you. Loved. She just wants to be loved. Maybe money. What am I going to do? I don't have any money. I don't have any place to go.
Right.
How about fear? I'm terrified. Afraid
yes.
He's going to kill me. Or do something. I'm serious. If he's willing to choke me and he threatens me, he'll do that to me.
He could track me down.
Stalking you everywhere. It's stalking you online, on your phone, on everything. It's ripping doors off the wall.
And that's terrifying.
The kids could be a reason. It could be broken relationship stuff. She just is broken.
Does my husband have a right to his children? Am I going to take those kids away from him?
And so as a result, if you're in a position to help, you've got to understand these driving forces that are keeping her locked into a potentially threatening situation. Not only just her and her kids. And it's complicated.
It's extremely complicated. When I train therapists to work with batterers and I train therapists to work with victims, this is a 50 or 48 hour coursework. I certify them, they've taken the coursework, and then they've got to go for a year, 1,000 hours under supervision under another person's license in order to receive cases from the courts. And the law is specific. For example, a domestic violence counselor cannot see both the victim and the abuser in the same session. It's against the law because we have a tendency to take sides. And it used to be that in the 70s, the man was sent packing. You know, just go somewhere else and you guys learn to get along. I don't want to come back here. But since things like O.J. Simpson, the women's movement has really sparked I don't want to call it a revival, but certainly the importance of being able to help victims and to address the needs of the batterers and the victims.
The helping journey. Let's go there. Barry, I guess first of all, when do you make the call that she's got to get out of the situation? We always operate on a zero tolerance policy when it comes to any type of physical violence. And I think you would agree with that. I mean, I'm telling you what, if my daughter was getting hit, I'd be going over there this afternoon.
Yes.
We'd be packing everything up and we'd be going to a different place.
What's different about a woman living with a man by herself and she has no family? He controls the finances. He controls who she sees.
Yeah.
She controls who she talks to. She may not even be able to drive.
So you need a safety plan on how to get her out of
that
thing.
Well, the safety plan, yes, that needs to be determined. How are we going to do that? Here's another thing. Does she really want to leave? She's afraid to leave.
Some of these things, by the way, are holding her there.
Yeah.
But you've got to get her into a place of safety.
But as a professional counselor, you cannot make someone do that. You can encourage them, but you got to be careful. And there needs to be, like you said, a safety plan.
Because if she's reckless here, it may be setting her up to get hurt. If she says, I'm leaving, he'll come home and go crazy on her.
And they do. We had in San Diego a young lady that he had abused his girlfriend very badly, and she was a college student at San Diego City College. This is in all the papers. And she had gotten a restraining order. He had restraining orders against him. Did that help? No, he tracked her down at school, caught her in the women's bathroom, and murdered her, stabbed her to death. Well, the guy's doing hard time at San Quentin. You know, that's death row. We don't have a death row anymore. It's been taken care of out in California. That's another story. But yeah, you're right. It's dangerous. This is a very dangerous thing. We have to be in mind that if a woman is murdered in her home, one out of every three homicides of a woman is by a previous spouse or a current spouse. That's why when the police go into a homicide of a woman, they're going to be, first thing they're going to look at is the spouse. That's the first one, because one out of three homicides of women are by a former or current spouse.
Let me say it again. I, on a personal level, I have a zero tolerance, period. And we've got to immediately figure out how to help her out of a very helpless and hopeless situation here.
Oh, yeah.
And Barry, the truth is, I don't believe the relationship has really any hope unless you can get out of that and get this thing going in a different direction, because it's not going to get fixed.
All right. We have hotlines where you can call and get help. Almost every large city has resources that will help women. Unfortunately, it's such a huge problem, there aren't a lot of resources available sometimes. So you've got to be strategic and have the bed ready for her and have a time and have a plan on how you're going to get her to safety.
I recommend that counselors, therapists, pastors, people involved in this kind of ministry or have this kind of influence in the lives of women need to know, for example, where is their local domestic violence shelter? Who are the connections and more? How do we prescriptively walk our way through this thing? Connect those dots for these people.
Can I share something with you? We did our batterers abuse programs in churches, and that was part of my doctoral thesis, and I just turned it into a business. And we eventually had programs in four churches, and the pastors understood, and these were great guys. But I had one, I talked to a pastor about starting a domestic violence abusers program in his church. And he says, well, I have over 200 people in my church. I know them intimately. We have no problems with that. I have no one that's guilty of any kind of domestic violence. And I said, Pastor, I said, I don't know that the numbers are going to prove you out. I think you're going to be saddened by it when you do find out eventually. He went home to his wife. He says, you know what that Barry Lord's doing? He wants to start a domestic violence program in our church. His wife says to him, thank God. He goes, why? What? What? She says, we have 10 families right now where the husband can't go home because of a restraining order because of violence. He said, I did not know that. She goes, no, and they're not going to tell you either. The best friend of domestic violence is keeping secrets. Women feel that they're betraying their husband if they report it. I mean, there's a lot of mixed emotions. Sometimes they just have to get doggone angry enough in the situation where they pick up the phone and call the police. Then you need to have your plan of getting her into a shelter and the family. What about the dog? Do you know the guy can track you through your vet? Another issue that we haven't even talked about, and you mentioned it earlier, I believe, is about stalking. These men stalk. When I'm working with these men, one of the things I tell them, they've all got restraining orders to begin with. And if they violate that restraining order, it can be a felony or at least a contempt of court. But I tell them, you cannot drive by. You cannot go over there. If she calls you and invites you to come home, you can't. You have to follow the directives of the restraining order. Otherwise, you're going to be arrested and go back to court. And you're going to have to answer before the judge and probably do some time. It can be a separate crime just driving down her street. So don't call her. Don't go near her. You obey that restraining order. Every guy gets that lecture from me and from my staff. Stalking is a major crime. If you get arrested a second time for stalking, and by the way, they do, because the women take pictures of them sitting outside their house. They document. We teach the women to document. Document, document, document. Especially in stalking cases, because the DAs need that physical evidence. It can't just be your word before they prosecute. So the stalker, if he's arrested a second time or it's felony stalking, or they violate the restraining orders, they can be made in California under certain rules. They can be made to register as a sex offender from that point on. And sex offenders, for 10 years, they could have to register.
Barry, let me stay with her for a moment. Let's just say a safety plan's been developed together.
With a therapist or a social worker or
yeah.
or an agency that deals in this? Okay.
So someone's there developing it. Going through this process, it's a journey.
Absolutely.
I can see her potentially needing to interact with the police.
Uh-huh.
I can see her potentially needing to interact with someone on helping her manage her finances. The challenges maybe with parenting the kids and the concern they have, and they're all over the place, struggling with feelings of worthlessness and confusion over this whole issue and more.
How about division of wealth they've already accrued? You need to find an attorney in your area that knows the law and knows this subject matter so that they can help her. And he's going to have to pay for it if he's the main breadwinner. Sometimes they'll track him to their work. And we have cases all over the place where husbands have gone in and shot several people. And some of these guys are just out of it. They're either narcissistic, there's keratological disorders going on, there can be anything going on. My heart breaks for these people. They're stuck.
So how do you speak into her life? What are the top two or three issues, Barry, that you think need to be kind of a centerpiece of helping her?
Number one, I know that she's going to have issues of hopelessness and helplessness and depression and anger and rage. She's got to go through that whole gamut.
Fear.
Fear, absolutely. Fear for her abuser. Fear for her kids. What's my parents? A lot of time these guys will present as very logical. She's nuts. She's making this stuff up. I'm the victim here. I mean, I hear this story all the time. They're ingratiating. They can be level-headed. And if you just talk with him, you'd think, what is she putting on here? So they're good con artists. You know what the word personality means? It means to speak through the mouthpiece of a mask. And these guys will go out and play a part, the victim part. I've never had an abuser that I've worked with in groups that was not the ultimate victim, playing a part. So understand, I don't buy into that. Neither do my staff.
She's going to need a strong support system.
Like that. Don't buy into the stories. In other words, let her work through her issues as much time as you can give her to work through those issues. She needs a plan of safety. The kids need a plan of safety. The courts need to be involved. They need to adjudicate it. There needs to be protective orders. All of the above. And it can't be just one place. A place that will take their pets. You can't leave the pets roaming the streets. So, I mean, somebody to help her doing the legwork. Like I said, in California, we have all 32 agencies, including the courts, medical, attorneys, doctors, you name it, everything, including pet care, all under one roof in San Diego. You need programs like that in every city. So one-stop shopping for her.
Let me jump to the perpetrator for a moment. In many of these cases, there's a desire to see if we can fix what's broken between us as a family, in a marriage. And Barry, I'm going to jump way ahead here and ask, when is it okay to let him come back? A reconciliation piece.
Yes.
I want to jump there because I think a lot of our listeners, they may come back and this is where she gets pretty tense. I want to personalize it for a moment. When would it be okay for, I'll just say Megan, and she's married to a wonderful guy here, but I'm just going to play it out. When would it be okay for him to be allowed to come back into the home if he abused her, if he hurt her, if he violated her? She wants him. She wants him to come back. How long does he have to go? What kind of fidelity? What does he have to demonstrate in terms of anger management, his capacity to control impulse, and his potential rage? What's the proving ground right there?
I'll tell you what's being done, and that is we don't predict safe behavior. We have your reunification plans, and those can be drawn up by the court. He can say, you have to undergo so many hours of counseling, so many hours of drug abuse counseling, so many hours of domestic violence recovery programming. The courts can determine all that as part of the probation. As a therapist, I would never, ever say when somebody is safe, because guess what? I don't know. And I would get, as a therapist, hung out to dry if I tried to predict when the safety is going to occur. I don't know. So it's best left up. This is such a legal issue, a criminality issue, that it's best left up to the court systems of your individual states. Some states are better at this than others. I will tell you, California is really good at this. I left California for a number of reasons, but I'll tell you one thing they're good at, and that's domestic violence and holding the abusers accountable. The guy has to be held accountable. You have to earn your way back, and X, Y, and Z is what you have to do. But again, we're talking to people from all over the United States, and there's 50 states and 50 set of laws and so on and so forth. The answer is, it depends. I'm sorry.
Getting to that place where there's no fear in this love.
Can he earn her trust?
Yeah.
I shared with you, we had one case where the man had poured gasoline over a woman and stood there with a match. There's never going to be recovery in that one. She runs anytime you mention his name, and rightfully so. She comes by her fear honestly.
Now that's sick stuff.
You think? This is what we're dealing with. Tim, I hate to say it, but we're in a fallen state. I know the atheists don't like that, but there's a thing called sin and powers and principalities and stuff like that going on. Listen, tell you, there's some sick stuff out there. And we're having to make our way through this mirage of chaos. And you're right, it is chaos. It's a tough subject to talk about. I can give you statistics all day long. I can talk to you about the honeymoon and the rising tension and the violence, you know, the cycle of abuse. We can talk about all those things. This is such a broad subject. But because you're dealing not only with batterers, you're dealing with recovering abused people.
I'm thinking about the Apostle Paul when he talked about godly sorrow and repentance and what that would really look like in this scenario, you know?
Can I tell you that I'm jaded?
Yeah, please do.
I'm jaded, Tim. I'm jaded.
Because you don't know when it's a game.
I don't.
That psycho kicks back in and the remorse is all over the place.
Because they're going back in the same system. Let me explain. Sometimes when we're work, I write behavioral plans when I used to work for the state. And I was one of the people that put people in and out of state hospitals and had to do it through the courts and all that. And I didn't always have an answer for the judges. I didn't always have an answer for the DAs and the sheriff and the people that were dealing with mental health issues around violence. So I didn't always have an answer for them, but I will tell you that we were doing our best with what we had and what we knew at the time. And if we err on the side of caution, I don't think that's a bad error. So I do think we need to be cautious. I do think we need to hold these men and women, because there are women abusers out there, not a lot, but there are some. We need to hold them accountable to the law and to the strictness of the law. You cannot use force and fear in a relationship where there is a covenant of safety and trust. And you violate that, you betray the person, there's going to be consequences.
Barry, we've been talking about the possibility of building a curriculum, a kind of a best practices curriculum using some of the thought leaders, practice leaders of our field. Share a little bit about your vision for that in modern day Christianity.
I think that we Christians are the salt in our society. And salt has several things that it does right. Number one, salt is a preservative. Our society needs a preservative. Salt is a cleanser. It kills germs. We need salt in our society to kill the germs in our society. And salt is sometimes used in asphalt as a glue. We need the salt to be the glue of our society. So we have a number of jobs to do in our society as Christians. We have a part to play. Don't let the secularists dissuade you from being a part of what we need in our society. And I believe this Christian society is desperate for right living, right thinking, and right being. It is desperate for what God has to do through his people.
Barry, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to doing some more together. Your ministry of giving a voice to those who are voiceless, to giving life and hope to those who are hopeless, giving a sense of control to those who are feeling controlled, who are being controlled, and more. That's a noble calling. That's a beautiful gift from God to those who are desperate and need that help and hope.
We are the salt.
We're salt together, you bet.
That's right.
We salute you and deeply appreciate you being a part of our life. We get a chance to be a part of your life. Blessings to you all.
This is Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to a very sobering conversation here these past couple of days on Family Talk. Dr. Tim Clinton has been our host with his guest, counselor and therapist, Dr. Barry Lord. Now, if you can relate to the pain we've been talking about, please know that you are not alone. Please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline immediately at 1-800-799-7233. Again, that number is 800-799-7233. There are those standing by to help you if you or your children are in any danger. So call the National Domestic Violence Hotline right now at 800-799-7233. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow for a classic edition of Family Talk featuring retired LAPD officer Bob Vernon. He will discuss how we can practically maintain our spiritual well-being. This is a very insightful broadcast that you will not want to miss coming up next time right here on Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is James Dobson again. As we close today's program, I just want to thank so many of you out there who make this broadcast possible with your contributions. And I want to tell you how much your generosity is appreciated.